for some chin music.
Hey, Yomp, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
I've really prepared myself for playing outfield, no more DH than outfield, you know.
You said you're preparing yourself for playing outfield.
Yeah, no more DH than outfield. Last year it was... I was in a situation that I need to DH more than play outfield, but this year I'm really preparing myself to play more games in the outfield than DH.
Oh my gosh, welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 the score, David Haw, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. That was the voice of Aloha Jimenez saying somehow, Bruce, that he was preparing to play the outfield more than he was preparing mentally to be the DH for the White Sox. Someone missed a memo or something has gone terribly wrong. I'll let you go first. How did you interpret what Eloy Jimenez had to say, and what was your reaction to it?
My reaction is that after manager Pedro Grifol told us last week that, you know, he might get a couple of days a week here and there playing the outfield, but he's probably going to be the DH, that there was misunderstanding that Eloy had, that he's going to have a shot at being the full-time right fielder. Now, I understood left field. You know, left field has less challenges, certainly, than center and right. But since you went out and spent the most money in the history of the team on a contract for Benintendi, left field wasn't an option for you. Now you're taking a guy who's really not a very good outfielder and kind of endangered to himself and the team by being out there physically, and giving him a more difficult position to play in right field. I don't see it. I think athletically, right field is a much greater challenge for an outfielder, David, than left field is. Just the positioning of yourself, moving toward that that right field line, having to turn and make the throw to second, knowing the challenge to the throw of the ball to third is even greater in hitting the cutoff man. These are movements that have been difficult for Eloy to make without injuring himself, and I just don't understand why you would even consider this at all, other than giving the guy some incentive to come to the spring training and work hard. I just don't understand it. I mean, I went through his record for the 10,000th time, and he's yet to play a full season. David, guess how many is the most games he's ever played in his career?
122. Okay, 122 games.
You've done that homework as well, okay?
Every morning, 5:30 to 10, Bruce. Mullin Haw Show. Welcome in.
That's the most, okay? The average is about 85 to 90 games.
You can do all the math. The last two seasons, he's played 139 games and had 505 at-bats. That's one season, reasonably, from a man of his experience level and age. You should have those reasonable expectations. That 139 games is what Eloy Jimenez should have in 2023, if he stays free of injury. You know how he stays free of injury? You keep him out of the outfield. That's how.
I mean, look, granted, the other side of it is he's hurt himself running bases as well, okay? He's not a greatly coordinated athlete. He just isn't. So the knowledge of that just says, you know, try to protect him as much as you can by keeping the bat in his hands and limiting the amount of time he's out there moving around, because he's such an impactful hitter when he's available to you. He's a big difference in the lineup, and especially now that Abreu's no longer in that lineup, he's the main guy that has to drive in runs. And when you have him, you have him under contract for a long period of time, you would think the conversations are, Eloy, you know, at certain points, we will want you to play the outfield, but you know, 90% of the time you're going to have to, you know, be our DH because you're the most important hitter in our lineup. You appeal to the fact how important he is to you as a team player, as the team itself. We've already witnessed how the team's offense produces or doesn't produce without Eloy healthy in the lineup, and it's not a good look.
So I think the reason it stood out to me too, Bruce, was because on the day that Pedro Grifol was introduced, and that was a happy day for Sox fans. There was a lot of positivity in the air, and one of the reasons why was Pedro Grifol came across as a very strong communicator, and that was what he took the most pride in. And why it's significant to me, and I know some people don't think it's as important as maybe we're making it out to be, but you have a young player that is going to be at the heart of everything you do and for the next several years, a foundational piece, if you will. You're paying him like that in the middle of your batting order. And I think that if you were going to communicate with anybody, he's on a short list of players that you want to make crystal clear what the expectations are. And if you have made those expectations crystal clear to him, I don't understand why, you know, putting him in harm's way in the outfield would be part of that. So when he said that, as I don't want to say he was defiant. Eloy Jimenez really isn't defiant. He's a very positive personality. We have a lot of fun with his "hi mom" type of thing, and he's been a fan favorite for a reason. But it didn't sound like he was embracing the role that makes the most sense for him to play. And I don't think that he, frankly, should have a vote here. I don't think that at this point of his career he has earned that because of how he can't stay out of and off the injury list. So, Eloy Jimenez, you're a designated hitter, period.
Steve Stone said it best when he said, hey, you know, you have to realize at some point that the team comes first before what you want, okay? And in this case, Eloy's a joyful guy, a fan favorite, a really nice person. He's still not getting it. The fact that his best role to helping the team win is to be able to stay on the field and be able to hit.
And as you might imagine, former manager Ozzie Guillen, who was on the Mully and Haw show on Wednesday, was asked about Eloy playing designated hitter and this whole comment, and Ozzie was not as forgiving as maybe some other people would be. And this is what Ozzie had to say when asked about Eloy Jimenez playing designated hitter, or playing outfield a couple times a week and not just designated hitter full time.
I respect his opinion. I do, because still young. He don't want to have the DH guy for the rest of his career. But then the value when you play the field is obviously it's a little bit more money and more value for the ball club. I think the White Sox should just stop him and say, you know what, kid, you got to be the DH. This soap opera is on and on for the last 3 years. I hope this kid understand that. I truly understand his point. I do. I truly understand his point. But in the meanwhile, when you talk about we care about winning, we care about this, you see, that's an easy example. Players always put the self before, including myself. I play baseball. I include myself. We put the self before we put the ball club. And that's something people have to deal day in and day out. But I think this ball club is better with him in the DH spot.
That was Ozzie Guillen Wednesday. And I think the one thing that you have to remember that Pedro Grifol comes in, eliminate the drama. There should be no drama about this. This shouldn't be a story. This shouldn't be a headline. This shouldn't be something worthy of conversation in the last weekend in January, Bruce. I just think you want to eliminate as much drama, and being as definitive as I think we want him to be with Eloy as a DH is just part of that whole big picture in the process.
Yeah, without question. And, you know, again, we're not making Eloy into a bad guy. The whole thing has to be about winning, doesn't it? The recognition that the team's coming off of a bad season. The player is coming off of missing 80 games. There's no self-recognition here on the part of Eloy that he needs to be out there and protected in a major way to make sure that he essentially can drive in 120 runs, hit 40 home runs, help them win a division. You know, I don't know what the conversation could even be about. David, if you're if you're the manager, you're the general manager, I mean, you're sensitive to what the player wants. You like that he wants to play, but it doesn't help the team. How do you win when the guy doesn't understand the philosophy of being out there every day and the best chances available to him to stay out there?
Yeah, nobody's being critical of Eloy Jimenez necessarily. I think I'm a big fan. I get teased on the morning show from one of our favorite callers, Kevin from Palatine, for thinking that Eloy is more capable of doing things than a lot of people think that he is. He could be a star if he can stay healthy. He's got to stay healthy, and I think that's what is at the root of all of this conversation is, you know what, the best way for him to stay in the lineup long-term and have the kind of career he's capable of having is playing to his strengths, and one of his strengths is his biggest strength is being a power hitter in the middle of that lineup. So that is why you get so much reaction to things like this. The other thing that drew a lot of reaction this week, Bruce, in White Sox world was beyond the Clevinger story, beyond the Eloy comments, was the good news. We talked to Steve Stone about it. He's returning to the booth. So is Jason Benetti. And there were some questions whether or not that would happen in an initial report that was not entirely accurate, but Jason Benetti re-signed with the White Sox to return to the booth, and that is good news. And he was on with Danny Parkins on Friday afternoon, and this was part of what Jason Benetti said in that interview about returning to Chicago.
I love this job so much. I really, 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 really do love this job so much. And I think everybody knows that 2021 was hard on me with the travel stuff, and there was some strife there and all that. And, you know, like, there was a little bit of, like, experiential learning. Like, I felt a little bit like a player. Like, I now know what the arbitration process is like, where, like, people walk into a room and they're like, yeah, you know, like, is it, are you that good? You know, that sort of thing, right? Like, you hear about with the players all the time. But I'm obviously joking, but I want to be here, and I have always wanted to be here, and there's really no circumstance that, you know, especially just surveying how well it's gone with Steve and how much I've enjoyed it and how great so many people in the organization have been. I want to be here.
Jason Benetti on Friday afternoon with Danny Parkins talking about his return to the White Sox booth and how much he loves that job.
He loves the job, but he is such an important broadcaster all over the country now, you know, working for Fox and having this huge job. You know, that's why there was doubt out there. You know, the fact that he said he's going to be doing over 200 events, you know, this year. So how long can the White Sox really expect to hold on to him, knowing that he is, you know, still emerging as one of the top broadcasters in the industry at a very young age? I mean, he's got, you know, arguably 30 years ahead of him to continue to grow in that job and be one of the top broadcasters. He's already there. He's already at the plateau. So will the White Sox be able to keep him, or does he go the direction of a lot of great broadcasters, you know, the Dick Enbergs and the Kurt Gowdies and all those people and the Bob Costases who, you know, started doing team games and got so big that they really couldn't continue to do that any longer. You know, will Benetti be there for the long run for the White Sox?
Well, I watch a lot of college football and maybe less of college basketball, but I will say this about Jason Benetti. He's very good at those two sports, and I can understand why Fox wanted to lock him up to do more things than just be in the White Sox booth. And I think that there is a balance to strike when you have his ability and his talent and his versatility. Then it's in the White Sox best interest to maintain a relationship, however limited it might be. So I think this might be the best of both worlds for Jason Benetti, but also White Sox fans, Bruce. I think that, yeah, you long for the days where you had this relationship where, you know, maybe your broadcaster was in the booth for 150 or 60 games a year, and that was, you know, a couple days off here or there, fine. But things have changed to the point where you have an understanding. We don't watch the games the same way we used to watch games, and those relationships are sort of maybe changed or are different. So whatever the Sox needed to do to comp, maybe it's a compromise position, I'm glad they did it if they believe that Jason Benetti and Steve Stone are who they want to represent them. And, you know, they symbolize the White Sox broadcast as much as anything, whether it's 105 games a year or 145 games a year. They're getting him as much as they possibly can get out of him because he does have other skills that are obvious.
You know, on the other hand, you know, with the Bulls, you have Adam Amin, who's one of the great young broadcasters out there as well. You know, how long will the Bulls be able to hold on to him, knowing, you know, how important his other broadcasts are, how good he is on national broadcasts, on baseball, you know, and football. So we're very privileged here in Chicago to have some of the great broadcasters that are being sought out nationally by big media companies to do more and more and more. And, you know, again, you can't keep these great young broadcasters down. If they have to go, they go. I mean, that's just the way it is. My question to you, David, is who would be emerging to replace a guy like Benetti and Stone if Steve decides to retire in the next year and Jason is just pulled to the point where he is so worn out from all the national broadcasts that he doesn't want to continue doing White Sox baseball?
It's a great question. I think there are a lot of good play-by-play guys out there that would come to mind. We can talk about that during another show. Maybe Len Casper would slide over and go back into a very familiar TV role, even though he loves radio and is very good at it. A.J. Pierzynski is a guy that I would love to see in the Sox booth at some point in time. Look, Ozzie Guillen could do whatever he wants to do in the broadcast industry.
I want Ozzie to do play-by-play, David.
Hey, well, I think that would be amusing for an inning. And then I think that maybe Ozzie would say, please help me out. And he knows his strengths, and his strengths are bringing the strong opinion and being being the guy that is not afraid to tell the truth. And we love Ozzie for that here on The Score. Bruce, before we break, real quickly, want to get your quick reaction to Chip Carey, speaking of broadcasters, going from the Braves booth to the Cardinals booth. Probably see a lot more of him now as a rival of the Cubs and him going back to St. Louis where he spent part of his childhood.
Yeah, it's a kind of a natural thing. I saw some reports out there how, you know, Chip has been with Atlanta for his whole career. Obviously, we know better. He spent 5 years here in Chicago starting in 1998 with the Cubs. And, you know, whether you love him or you think he's good or great or not as great, Chip Carey is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet in your life. Just a tremendous individual. I think a solid broadcaster. And it's his birthright, you know, going back to where his grandfather started in St. Louis in the 1940s. And then his father being born and raised there, moving on to being really the most important voice of the Atlanta Braves when they were in the 70s and on TBS, you know, moving forward, him and Ernie Johnson Sr., you know, doing a lot of the broadcasts back then when they became the first national cable entity that any of us have ever saw them, along with the Cubs eventually coming along on the Superstation. So I'm happy for Chip. It hasn't been officially announced. And as soon as it is, you know, our friend Chip will be on the show with us.
Yes, had a good text exchange with him this week about that when it happens and is made official. Happy for somebody who does the job the right way and treats people with a lot of sincerity. And we appreciate Chip Carey, at least we do here in Chicago. Not all circles, but I think he's generally known as a pretty good guy, and happy for him and his family. All right, Bruce, when we come back, you want to get something off your chest about the Hall of Fame voting, and I'm glad that you're addressing this. We'll do that next on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
I was never, I don't think, you don't think about this. You know, you think about trying to do the best you can and play for your team and play the game as best you can, and there's such a long road. I never thought that a Hall of Fame was going to be the answer. But thank you very much. It's great. And I'm going to apologize immediately. This is my third Zoom call of my life, I believe.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. David Haw, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. That was Scott Rowland, the only new member of the Hall of Fame class as elected. Fred McGriff will go in as a contemporary era committee nominee. And I think Scott Rowland goes in this week. Bruce, he received 297 votes. There were 389 ballots cast, so he was the only guy that met the threshold of being at least on 75% of the ballots, the Baseball Writers Association of America. It is a long tradition of voting. You and I are both voters, and we've cast ballots this year. But I think that every year we have a conversation afterward about whether or not this is the right process and could there be other ways to tweak it or maybe even change it. I know you have strong thoughts on that, so I'll let you begin. What was your reaction when Scott Rowland was announced as the only member of this year's Hall class, and how might it be a better process in your mind?
Well, first of all, maybe they need to lower the amount to get in to 70%, okay? You have to get 75. It's been proven to be hard. It's supposed to be the hardest Hall of Fame to get into. It's the most time-tested and honored Hall of Fame that there is out there. It's something that people really care about that love the game of baseball. So fans love it. But like the NFL, where they automatically put six guys in a year, that's a watered-down version of it. So it doesn't really have the same bite. Baseball has that honor going back to 1939 with the first class going in. Actually, the first class went in 36 and the ceremony not till 39. But, you know, the reality is that as a voter, David, I think our system can change and it can be better. If I didn't think that a guy was a Hall of Famer last year and I didn't vote for him, I think automatically I should not be able to vote for the guy again in the future. Okay. And the reason I say that is if I don't think a guy is a Hall of Famer this year, and I've done my homework and I'm considered to be an authority enough to have a vote, why would my opinion change? How can my opinion change if I've already done the proper vetting and I've done my due diligence? If I'm so my theory is that if I didn't vote for Scott Rowland this year and he didn't get in, I should not be able to vote for Scott Rowland next year. Okay, I just feel that the idea of flip-flopping and showing that I voted for a guy now, I think the whole system is flawed because they say you can vote for 10 guys. You know, first of all, that's too many. There's never a year where there's 10 worthy candidates to go into the Hall of Fame. They're just
fair enough. I voted for 5. I voted for Rowland, Helton, Wagner, Jones, and Burley. And as to that question, it is interesting, Bruce, and I think it's a fair point of discussion, but I am looking in the mirror, and I see somebody who changed his mind the way you just described. I did not vote for Mark Burley the last couple of years. My mind on him changed because my thoughts on pitching and starting pitching evolved. And I think that I'm entitled to have those changes of opinion based on how the game changes. So Mark Burley, in this example, to me, was more qualified as the game has changed because I think that his endurance, his dependability, his consistency, and the things that we're all familiar with in Chicago are appreciated more as time passes because of the way the game has changed. So guys, starters go four innings and everybody has a celebration. We've talked about this before, but that's just one example about why maybe I don't agree with you fully, because I do think that we change the way we view people, and sometimes time allows us to appreciate them more.
I just think that if I do that, and I haven't done my work personally, I'm not saying it's you or anyone else.
Yeah.
But if the guy didn't pop into my mind in my homework on the guy, if it didn't work the year before, then I'm just flip-flopping and I'm responding to a weaker class of players that are available and that there was no stronger ones. So I think the voters, being the Baseball Writers of America, sometimes feel obligated to vote somebody in. And as John Paul Morosi of Fox put it, he said, I'm for the big Hall of Fame. I vote for 10 because I think it's good for the sport to every summer have at least two or three guys that are put in. It's great promotion for the game, and it's for the fans, and it's for promoting the sport. And my theory on that is, no, it's the Hall of Fame. It's for the very best. It's not about a promotional angle. It's about talking about and putting in the very best players, not the very good players, but the best players in the game. I know it's subjective. I know it can change. But to me, the only, you know, less than 300 guys in the Hall of Fame in its great history going back to 1876, as far as Major League Baseball, that's what makes it special, David. To me,
I respect that. But I'm probably more in line with Morosi, and I would probably be more inclined to lower the threshold to 70%, and so maybe more people would get in. I do find it a bit of a contradiction to celebrate the greatest in the game and then every summer be disappointed that there's only two guys who are going to be honored this July, Fred McGriff and Scott Rolen. I think we can do better than that. I think that the game needs more than that, and I think when you look at – yes, it is the Hall of Fame. The argument that I've pushed back at the most since Roland was announced, and I get feedback, whether it's in social media or just conversation with baseball fans, is, you know, I hear Scott Rolen's name, and it doesn't say Hall of Fame to me immediately. That used to be the way that we could measure this, but now we have a more sophisticated way to evaluate players and their careers and their success level. Scott Rolen, from the metrics point of view, was a highly accomplished third baseman who left no doubt that he belongs and deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, even though his name may not jump off the page.
I totally disagree. There's not one game where I watched Scott Rolen play. See, I betted his numbers. I betted his numbers just like you did.
Yes.
But I watched hundreds of his games, okay? There was never a point where I watched Scott Rolen on the field and said, boy, this is a future Hall of Famer.
I don't care. I know you don't, Bruce.
Because the numbers indicate that he's among the very good and therefore should be considered for the Hall of Fame, right?
The numbers dictate when you look at his WAR, when you look at where he is in OPS,
numbers.
when you look at the statistics that we measure greatness by, we are now at a point where it's not 1983 and we don't have to be limited by how we evaluate success. And Scott Rolen, by any baseball analyst measure, is a Hall of Fame player. And really,
absolutely,
it's irrelevant
not
to me. It's irrelevant what kind of reaction his name elicits from fans
or
reporters.
Did you ever watch a Scott Rolen game? First of all, how many times did he bat third and fourth in his career? Second of all, how many times did you see Scott Rolen come up and go, oh boy, they better walk him here in this situation because he's gonna change the game. He's gonna turn it around. Did you ever mention Mike Schmidt's name or more modern like Arenado? Would you mention Arenado and Rolen in the same breath?
Is Arenado going to the Hall of Fame?
Absolutely, first ballot Hall of Famer already.
Right now, you can say that. I don't even know what his numbers, but you're saying he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Absolutely. Yeah, Adrian Beltre is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Okay.
Okay.
There's guys and then there's guys, right? And Scott Rolen was a very good player, a guy that you love to have on the team, help you win, but not the impact player that I would vote for going into the Hall of Fame. Sorry.
Well, Bruce, did you know that he was runner-up for Mr. Basketball in Indiana in 1993? Can I explain
you there? Now we know.
Okay, that's part of it. No, it's not part of it. From a baseball perspective, it's very easy to defend a guy who has the numbers that he has, that he accumulated. I know
you watched him play, David. You watched him play. Did you say, hey, this guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer, he's a 10th ballot Hall of Famer, he's a 6th ballot? I mean,
does
really?
Mark Burley belong?
In the Hall of Fame? Yeah, he's in the White Sox Hall of Fame.
Does he belong to the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Probably not.
Okay, well, I think that some people
will vote for him. Was he a dominant pitcher during his era?
He was the Scott Rolen of lefties.
Did he ever win the Cy Young?
No!
But I
think that Scott Rolen going in, he didn't have the MVP voting numbers. He didn't have a lot of things, but I think that I am not Mr. Metrics. You know that. But I think when you look beyond the numbers that you can make an easy argument for why he belongs to be immortalized with everybody else who was in there.
Maybe we're talking incorrectly about this. Maybe there should be a whole different system. Again, they tried the Hall of Famers voting for as being the Veterans Committee for 4 or 5 years in a row, and they didn't vote anybody in. And they decided to do away with that. They were the Veterans Committee like 10 years ago, and they voted nobody in. Maybe there shouldn't be any Veterans Committee. Maybe there shouldn't be – maybe the baseball writers should have different criteria that the Hall of Fame presents to them to vote for Hall of Famers.
Those maybe are interesting. Maybe because there's 389 ballots that were cast. And I wonder, when you look at the football process, there's, I think, maybe 44 electors for the Canton Pro Football Hall of Fame. Are you suggesting to narrow the scope and reduce the pool of potential voters?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You know, am I more qualified than Chip Carey, than Jason Benetti, than Steve Stone to vote for players that are being in the Hall of Fame? Why aren't announcers included in the Hall of Fame voting? They see as many games as anybody, okay? So maybe it should be divvied up more with the Baseball Writers of America. I think it's a real challenge for baseball writers to get this right. They spend a lot of time delving into the numbers. They delve into players that they saw. I think they do a great job of figuring out who to vote for and who not, but it doesn't. It seems like it's a little uneven from time to time, the way it comes
Interesting.
Out.
You include broadcasters, I think, then you are getting maybe that experience, but also you're not getting the objectivity that I think the whole system was designed to have and to look into. That's why the Baseball Writers Association of America is a group of voters that are objective by definition of their jobs. So I think that's what you're looking for as much as anything. But it is something that is, you know, worth discussing further.
David, and I'm thrilled and honored to be able to vote for the Hall of Fame. I really am, and I'm sure you feel the same way. But I can't tell you that there's sometimes I'm uneasy about voting or not voting for a guy because of numbers or because of, you know, comparing him to Mike Schmidt or to Mickey Mantle or to Babe Ruth. You know, there's Babe Ruth and I don't know, I'm trying to pull a name out of the hat. I mean, it's an unequal thing. You look at Rick Farrell, a guy that hit 220 for his major league career. He's in the Hall of Fame as a catcher because he caught 1,800 games. Okay.
Wow.
At the time, the most in baseball history. There's a lot of inequities involved in this system.
Yeah, and I think we can agree to disagree on certain parts of it and agree to agree on others. But that's the fun every year to have these kinds of debates. When you come back, a quick Cubs thought from Trey Mancini. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
The Cubs were a team the whole time that we thought would be a great fit for me. You know, I have a lot of Midwest roots and went to college nearby. And, you know, in the team, too, it just seemed like a great fit, a team, you know, where I could move around in the different positions I've played in my career, whether it be first, outfield, DH. You know, I'm always down for any of them, good to play wherever they want me. So, you know, I thought the team would be a great fit. And with the moves that we've made this offseason, you know, it's a really exciting team to play for moving forward.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Bruce, that was Trey Mancini, consummate teammate, great veteran addition, saying everything you would expect a guy that puts the team ahead of himself. That was earlier this week, and I think that was what you would expect from an exemplary veteran.
I'm all for Trey Mancini, but give me some more stars, would you, David?
You need a star in that
more
lineup.
Stars? Can we get some more stars on the Cubs?
Yeah,
I mean, they did a great job. Look, Hoyer and company did a great job of, you know, bringing in a star shortstop. Okay, fantastic. They got a star pitcher. That's great. You know, I want more stars on the north side of Chicago. Okay, I think Mancini is a nice fit as a part-time player, an extra guy to go along with Hosmer. But you know, it just doesn't totally float my boat as to the answer at first base. Is the combination of the two really the answer at first base for the Cubs going forward? Is it just holding a place for Mervis, who they hope is going to be grabbing hold of that job sometime toward the end of the year?
your stars may be in the minor leagues. Your stars may be on other teams. You don't have a star necessarily, a superstar in that everyday lineup. That said, Bruce, $300 million in player contracts in this winter in terms of investments. More free agent players, new free agent players added than any team in the majors. I think this has been a very productive, sneaky, good offseason for the Cubs.
I mean, they're incrementally getting better. Okay. I think they've done a good job of that. And I think Hoyer is sticking to his guns and about the rebuild of the Cubs and the evolution of that happening in a timely manner. I'm an impatient guy. I don't have a lot of time left on the planet.
God, I know.
Okay. It's going to be Inside the Clubhouse with David Haw and, you know, I don't know, you know, one of these days soon. But the reality is that I'm a star power type guy. I'm used to, you know, having stars to root for. Okay.
You want your Mike Schmidt in that lineup.
You know, all those years that Sammy Sosa doesn't get much love anymore, but all those years where the Cubs were not a competitive team, but Sammy was out there busting it, doing 30-30, hitting 50, 60 home runs, clean or not, that was star power, okay, back then. That, we were able to watch that. I think big city teams like the Cubs, the White Sox, Mets, Yankees, Dodgers, Angels, you have to have stars. You know, you have to have star power. Yeah, you want the team to be good, and I think Hoyer's doing a very good job of moving the team toward being a championship caliber team again sometime down the road. I just like to have some star power every year.
Speaking of stars, stay, keep it right here at the Score all day long. Steve Rosenblum follows us. Then Zach Zaidman with the call to Paul versus Marquette at 12:45. Bulls and Magic, the listless Bulls against the Magic at 5:45. All building a bridge to tomorrow. Tomorrow's a big day here at the Score. Both championship games, the NFC's at 2 o'clock between the 49ers and the Eagles, followed by Bengals Chiefs right here on the Score. Westwood One's broadcast. You want to be here for both games on Championship Sunday. Bruce, this has been a great show. It's been a lot of good back and forth, and thank you for your role in getting our guest Steve Stone and everything else you brought to the table.
David, always a pleasure. Sean Sears, great job of producing the show. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. Spring training is so close, and we will continue to be with you every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball on the Score from 9 until 11. David, have a great week.
Have a Hall of Fame-worthy weekend, Bruce. You deserve it. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Rosenblum is next.